Today is Juneteenth, 2050, in Sasana era, 2559. The Dhamma talk Sierra planned to give to the yogi here at TMC will be related to the Dhamma talk he had given the last time regarding to the Subrahma, the deity. So here are some yogis are newcomer, so they may not be present last time. So Sierra repeated briefly the story of Subrahma deity. And Subrahma is a very powerful deity, Deva. He got the 1,000 deities, the devis, and half of them died suddenly and reborn in the woeful state in the hair. So, and also he found himself and the remaining 500 devis also will be going to die and reborn in the same woeful state. So that's Deva, really fear and frightened by his, haunted by his near future event. So he came down to the Buddha, approached to the Buddha and asked how to overcome this kind of fatal problem. And then the Buddha gave Dhamma talk, brief Dhamma talk, Nyatra, Buddha, Tapata, and so on. So Sierra expounded this brief Dhamma talk last time related to sense restraint, Indriya Samvara, how to gain restraint over our senses. Today, this evening also, Sierra will continue that topic. So before I explained the brief Dhamma talk given by the Buddha, and then Sierra explained why this Subrahma Deva extremely scared and panic. Actually, the death is an unavoidable destiny for everybody. It's inevitable. Whoever born, we die for sure. So death is an unavoidable destiny for all of us. Why is Subrahma Deva so extremely scared by the death? Because he was going to be reborn in the woeful state, the hair. So that's the main reason why he was so scared, extremely scared and frightened. So that's why he approached the Buddha. So it is very important to face the our unavoidable destiny with the mindfulness. If we have developed mindfulness to a satisfactory state, and then we can overcome this kind of fright, this kind of fear, because if we have the mindfulness on our deathbed, there's no way for us to be reborn in the woeful state. If we have good development of mindfulness, we are bound to be reborn in the blissful state. So this is the reason why mindfulness is very important to develop. Now back to the Subrahma story. The Buddha gave him brief Dhamma talk. Unless you develop the Eightfold Noble Path and through the discernment of the Four Noble Truths, there is no way for living beings to be to gain the blissful life or to gain happiness. Unless we can overcome the mental defilements through the courageous effort, and there is no way for us to gain the happiness or blissfulness. And also it is necessary to develop the self-restraint or to undertake the virtuous practices starting from the self-restraint. And then, and also it's also quite important to overcome mental defilements so that we can experience the ultimate cessation of all kinds of suffering. So this is the aura of teaching. In terms of the practice, so by observing our sense restraints or restraint on the senses, and we make great effort called tapat in the continuous mindfulness, development of continuous mindfulness, then we can realize the Eightfold Noble Path and preliminary path and Eightfold Noble Path, Ariya Mega, Pobha Bhaga Mega, and Ariya Mega. So regarding the sense restraints, when we see something or someone, so there are four mental processes involved in the seeing process. And then through the first two, we see the visible phenomena, and with the second, we review that visible phenomena itself. And then the third and fourth, we get under illusion or the shape and form, illusory sense or the form and shape or the beautiful or ugly or the name and so on. Then we happen to arouse the mental defilements, attachment or anger or hatred. And so it's very important to be mindful of the seeing before we arouse the unwholesome mental state. So most probably, many mental defilements comes out of the seeing in the world. So the conceptual form and shape of something or someone and their name, these are all concepts, not something real. In ultimate sense, they are not something real. They are not really exist. So what really exists are all psychophysical phenomena. But when we cannot see the truth beyond the concept, we may argue each other regarding the seeing. Sometimes it may lead up to the battle and a war. So for example, we Buddhists honored or cherish Buddha statues. In the same way, Christian people, they honor and cherish the statue of Jesus and Mary. And similarly with the Islam and Hindu, they pray their God, their gods, and they cherish their statue and so on. So they don't pay respect to the Buddha statue. And we Buddhists also may not pay respect to their God statue. So when, for example, Buddhists see other people no respect to the Buddha statue, we may get angry, or we may get the disputed with others, even we may get involved in the bloody war. So today also we can see these events and the news. So these kind of disputes and conflicts are based on the seeing or the illusion that we take conceptual form or shape as something real, and we get attached to them. So from seeing, we have dispute and conflict. So when we note the seeing as seeing, and then we can become aware of the mental and physical phenomena involved, arising and passing away. So everything or not, the same, arising and passing away. When we really see that the truth in ultimate sense, we will feel, we ourselves will feel calm and peaceful, tranquil, and the whole universe will become tranquil and peaceful. So the awareness of seeing itself can bring us a lot of benefits. So regarding the hearing, so when we hear something or someone or a sound, we have to note it. Hearing. So hearing also actually involved four mental processes. And first of all, we hear the sound. So this is a first mental process. And secondly, we review what we just heard. And then thirdly, we recognized the name or something or someone. It's unlike the seeing. In the seeing, the mental process is to recognize the things or the people we see. But in the hearing, we know the name first. We recognize the name first. And through the fourth mental process, we recognize the person or things we hear. So imagine you talk to somebody you never met on the phone. You just hear him or her speaking. So first of all, you are going to hear the sound, and secondly, you recognize someone is talking, and thirdly, you recognize who he or she is. And number four, you imagine who or she look like. So, and then through the last mental process, you recognize or the imagine this who he is, who or she is talking, looks like. So as for the yogis, when we are here, we should note hearing. So when we note hearing, mostly we can recognize who is talking, who is speaking. We know right away just by listening his or her voice. And then, so it seemed to us we know someone's name first before his form or shape. But actually, when we hear, the first we recognize, we become aware of the sound, and then we review it, and then we follow his name, and then lastly, we recognize who he is, or who she is, and how she look like, something like this. But as for yogis, all we have to do is just note whatever we hear, just hearing, without letting our mind to go conceptual form or shape or personality or individual. And when we note the sound, hearing, we should not pay attention to where the sound comes from, the person who's speaking. Instead, we should focus our mind on our eardrum, and then note it hearing. So don't let your mind go to the person who is talking or where the sound comes from. So you try to note it hearing by focusing on the eardrum repeatedly, and then you can feel your eardrum is striked or impinged by the sound. And then you realize the sound is a physical phenomenon, certain kinds of physical phenomenon. The eardrum is also physical phenomenon. And then hearing is consciousness. If we fail to observe, if we fail to be aware of the hearing, and what happened to us? The Buddha said, Jatwari karna metan sotindriyan asan udan vikrantan, and so on. If we don't develop the restraint on hearing, and then we will get the illusion. For example, suppose we hear a bird singing, and unless we are mindful of hearing, then we follow the sound. Oh, this is what kind of bird it is. Oh, sound is nice, pleasant, and then we may feel the kind of the craving. So that's what we call abhijja, desire, and then craving and attachment will come into existence, will arise in us. And sometimes we may feel averse to the sound. Suppose, for example, the yogi next to you is behave, making noise, and then you may feel upset and or angry or such unconsiderate yogis making noise, disturbing others, and you feel angry. So unless we are aware of the hearing, then our mind is open to desire or discontent. We are tortured, tormented by desire and discontent in this way. So here the a poem composed by late Venerable Mahasi Searo. Searo recited the poem in Burmese. So the meaning is, if we note the hearing, the moment we hear, and then our mental process won't go beyond the real hearing state. We won't go to the conceptual form and a shape, and we won't develop or we won't arouse mental defilements as lobha, dosa, and so on. So when we note hearing again and again, and then we discern mind and metta involved in the hearing process. This song is metta, and eardrum is metta. Hearing is consciousness. There's a mind and a metta interplay. There's no I and a mind. So there's a mental and a physical phenomena. They are interacting as a cause and effect. We realize the law of cause and effect, and then we will discern their changes. When conditions are met, they arise and pass away moment by moment. So in this way, we develop the discernment of the psychophysical phenomena, their conditionalities and changes. That's how we are approaching closer to Nibbana. Similarly, we should be mindful or our senses, remaining senses like smelling, tasting, touching, and so on. When we smell something, and we should know smelling by focusing our mind on the nose rather than on the object. But some yogis, they are not mindful of hearing. Sometimes they even go to the flower and they kiss the flower. And some, they very cherish, they very attached to the perfume and so on. So when we have smell, we should note it, smelling. So in the same way as we note hearing, we can discern the mental and the physical phenomena involved in the smelling mental process. So the smell and nose is matter, physical phenomena, and smelling is consciousness. So the same is true with the eating, or tasting of the food. And here, the Searoji's and many other Searos, they taught us how to note the during the eating time. So here at TMC, also yogi are found to developing mindfulness during the eating. So by noting the mental and physical phenomena during the eating, we can develop the mindfulness, concentration, and progressive vipassana insight. So in this way, we develop the restraint in our senses. So this is a brief Dhamma talk given by the Buddha to Subrahma Deva. So here, Indriya Samvara Sila, the sense restraint, and how to observe this sila. And alternatively, this sila, we are supposed to observe four kinds of sila. The first sila is a Patimokkha sila, and the second is Ajiva Dhammaka sila, and the third is Paccaya Sannisita sila, and the last one is Indriya Samvara sila. So here Patimokkha sila literally refer to the monastic rules and regulation, which are supposed to observe by the monks and nuns. But for lay people, we have five precepts or the eight precepts along with the pure living. And so this kind of sila are called the Patimokkha sila. So lay people or the monastics, we have particular virtue to observe for lay people. If we can observe five precepts or eight precepts, we are considered we fulfill sila. We have fulfilled sila, Patimokkha sila, and at the same time, Ajiva Dhammaka sila, because the living is pure. So here you may be curious about the Ajiva Dhammaka sila, what Ajiva Dhammaka sila is. So Ajiva Dhammaka sila means the eight precepts. The last one is related to livelihood, pure livelihood, wholesome livelihood. So this sila is called Ajiva Dhammaka sila. The sila with the pure livelihood as the eighth precept. So this sila can be undertaken by us. There is a formula to undertake this sila. Quite similar way as we take the eight precepts or five precepts, like Aham Bhande, Ti Saranena Saha. We say the Brahmacharya Ajiva Dhammaka Silam instead of the Vinchan Silan, etc. And so on, Anoga, Katawa, Silan, Data, Mibandi, and so on. So it is of the eight precepts. So Panadipada, Viramani, refraining from killing, refraining from stealing, and refraining from sexual intercourse, unwholesome contact, sexual intercourse, and refraining from telling lying, refraining from telling slanderous speech, refraining from the harsh speech, refraining from frivolous speech, and lastly, the eighth precept is refraining from wrong livelihood. So this sila has the refraining from wrong livelihood as the eighth. That's why it is called the Ajiva Dhammaka Sila. So among these eight precepts, the first three, refraining from killing, stealing, and unwholesome intercourse, are related to our physical behavior, is a physical restraint. And then the last one, refraining from wrong livelihood, is related to our body and speech, in body and speech. So the rest four, the remaining four are refraining from four unwholesome speeches. So the third kind of sila is Paccaya Sannisita Sila. It is mostly applicable to the monastics, like the monks and nuns. So monks and nuns must use the four requisites with the proper correct purpose, correct consideration. When four requisites includes the robe and food, robe and shelter and medicine. So whenever they they eat food, they should recollect the correct purpose of eating food. And in the same way, when they use the when they wear robe, they have to recollect the correct purpose of the clothing. And in the same way, when they use the accommodation, when they take medicine, they have to recollect the correct purpose or the use or the requisites. That is what we call Paccaya Sannisita Sila, the sila morality related to the wholesome or moral use of the requisites. So there are many more to explain regarding the sila. So we continue this topic tomorrow. And in conclusion, Sierra said, according to the Dhamma talk given by the Buddha to the Subrahma Deva, we should try our best to restrain our senses so that there will be no gap or no room for mental defilements to come in. So whenever we see, we should be aware and hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, we should be aware the moment we experience the sense object. Then we can discern the mental and physical phenomena and their conditionalities and changes and impermanence. And in this way, Sierra wish may all of us be able to develop progressive vipassana insight until mega phala enlightenment and nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu.